Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture. The cardinal virtue of courage is something that turns out to be incredibly important for Plato's account of the human soul and Platonic ethics and politics in general, as he's discussing it in Republic Book 4. Now, he does also address this particular disposition or virtue in other places, most notably in the Phaedo, in the Laches, which is devoted entirely to unpacking what courage is, and in a few other places. But we here are going to concentrate just on what's going on in Republic Book 4, what Plato has to say about it there. It's quite interesting, and it's actually quite helpful, not only for understanding Plato, and quite possibly ourselves if Plato is right, but also for understanding how this virtue is understood in other virtue ethics that are non-Platonic throughout history, because they're taking their cues in part from this treatment, which seems to be eminently Socratic, in that Socrates tends to view the virtues, the moral dispositions that are good and needed for us human beings in order to do good actions, he tends to view them in terms of not just habits, not just the actions that are being produced, but something cognitive as well. And so we're going to get to that in just a moment. So we start by looking at what Plato has to say about where we should find courage. Now, let's remind ourselves that in Republic Book 4, Socrates has been elaborating this ideal city. Why is he doing that? Not for the purpose of actually saying we're going to create a city like this on Earth, but so that we can analogize from this city to human souls, because we ourselves are kind of like the city in that we have a similar structure. So what is the part of the soul that is going to need courage, and what is the part of the city that's going to need courage? Well, if we look at the city, it's the parts that deal with danger, that have to persevere in the face of resistance, of their own temptations to not stand up and do things. It could be fighting on the battlefield, which must have been a very scary proposition, lining up with a whole bunch of other guys with these heavy shields, not entirely covered in your body, never knowing if a spear thrust is going to gut you and you'll die of infection or the thrust itself and bleed out. And you got to stand there and hold your ground and jab other people with spears in the middle of dust and shouting and blood and guts everywhere. That's pretty scary. We might also think about sailors who, in the midst of a storm, have to secure vital equipment on the deck and getting up there on the deck, knowing they could be swept off by a wave and drown in the sea, which was a bad thing for Greeks. Ancient Greeks, maybe not so much in Plato's time, but before that, tended to think that if you died at sea, your ghost was not going to be happy with that compared to burial. So the part of the city that has to deal with this, that has to cultivate courage, is the part that has to brave dangers, if we want to do a little pun there on the word brave, right? What about the human soul? Well, it's the part of us that Plato calls thumos, this middle part located between the rational part up on high, which corresponds to the guardians, and the appetites down below, which correspond to the ordinary people. There's this middle part with which we get worked up or riled up. The Greek term for that Plato uses in the Republic is actually just a verb made out of the noun thumos, thumodzein, and it's sometimes translated as the part that with which we get angry, but it's really broader than that. It's also the part with which we, for example, when we're lifting weights and we get to the end of the set and we're tempted to not do the final repetitions, it's the part with which we push through and persevere. The part with which we make ourselves stand up against other things, perhaps outside and perhaps also within. So let's look at what Plato uses as sort of a definition of courage. I've got it here in the Greek, which literally will be Greek to you in the sense of being incomprehensible, but we'll go through and explain what each of the terms mean. But it's kind of good to look at this given how the translations sometimes meander a little bit from it. So in the Greek, it's to en ekeina ehein dunamin toi autein he diapantos sose ton periton denon doxan. What does all of this mean? So I'll give you one standard translation of this. He says, bravery belongs to a city by virtue of a part of itself owing to its possession in that part of a quality that under all conditions will preserve the conviction that things to be feared are precisely those which in such the lawgiver inculcated in their education. Now, that's not all of the Greek phrase corresponding to that. The English went on a little bit longer there, but all of those parts are important. So it's something in a person, in a human being, and we could call it a quality if we want, but he actually calls it, you know, this thing within us that allows us to retain, it's this, you might say, power, this capacity. Disposition would also be a way of translating it. Quality works, right? Although quality maybe sounds a little bit less forceful. And it allows us to preserve something. And that's where this sose, that's the word that we get sotor, savior, from, right? And a little bit later, he uses similar language. To preserve, to keep, to maintain, to guard, all of those are ways of translating. It allows us to preserve within ourself in all conditions, hey, diapantos, ton peri ton denon, doxan. This is really the most important core of it. Ten doxan, right? The doxa is a belief. Can also be translated as opinion. Can also be translated as it is in some translations, conviction. And it's not the same thing as episteme, knowledge, or wisdom, sophia. It's kind of lower on the Platonic scale of access to the true, the real, but it's still good in this case. And it's about what? It's about what is fearful, that is, what is fear producing? Knowing what really is to be feared and what is not to be feared. Let's pause for a moment and think about some of the things that people are afraid of that really don't bear fearing. And you can say, well, you know, everybody's got their emotions and emotions aren't right and wrong. From a Platonic perspective and from virtue ethics perspectives, some emotional reactions are indeed wrong. If I see, to use an example from Aristotle, if I see a tiny mouse which can't hurt me in any way, and I recoil from it as if it's, you know, a venomous snake or something like that, that's not a right reaction. That's not something to be feared like that. You know, you get the broom and push it out of the door if you don't like it being there, right? Or put a bucket over it and get it out, you know, or set a mouse trap, whatever you're going to do. Similarly, there are some things that we really should be afraid of. You know, if you're going up on deck in the middle of a hurricane to secure things, you should actually think that's scary. That doesn't mean that you can't do your duty if you're the sailor who unfortunately has to do that, but it is scary, right? So courage allows us to retain a right conviction about what things are and then to respond proportionately, to respond in the way that we ought to. And where does it get this knowledge from, this conviction? Well, Plato talks about three different things. In the formula that I just read you there, he talks about the lawgiver, right? The person who is literally laying the laws in place. The law itself can be what we ought to follow, law or rule. And then later on, when we're talking about the faculties of the human soul, what does courage need to obey? Reason. The rational faculty tells it what it ought to fear, and then it sticks with that. Now, it is a conviction or a belief, as we said. Let's talk about this in all conditions. This is where it gets really interesting. So Plato says that in all conditions includes, it's not a comprehensive list, dealing with pains or pleasures or desires or fears. So courage isn't just about dealing with fear, it's also about dealing with fear in the face of other things. Desire, we could have desire to enjoy something and the fear of not being able to get in on it, right? What we nowadays call FOMO, fear of missing out. Fear of missing out is really a fear of not getting what it is that you desire that you didn't realize you desired until you saw somebody else enjoying it. Right? Pains and pleasures. These can steer us in so many different ways. He says that the brave person preserves this understanding of what's fearful in both pains and pleasures, desires and fears, and does not expel it from the soul. They don't allow that conviction to be overturned by all these affective elements. They don't make an exception and say, well, in this case, no, they stick to the rule that has been given to them by some reliable source. Plato has a really interesting analogy here that he provides for us, and this refers back a bit to Book 3 and also to Book 2. He talks about this dyeing fabrics, something that most of us are not all that familiar with. If any of you ever experimented with tie-dyeing, you know, those packages that you could buy at the grocery store and play around with white shirts or sheets or whatever it is that you did, you know that some of the time, if you don't really dye it well or you didn't think through the fabric that you're using, it fades away. So what about this conviction? This conviction is like the dye. He says, when dyers want to dye wool so as to hold the purple dye, now purple is a very expensive one, so you got to make sure that it's going to stick. Selecting from the many colors, there be the one nature of the white. They don't just dye anything. They take white clothes, and then they give it a careful preparatory treatment so it will take the hue in the best way, and then after the treatment, and then only dip it in the dye. And he says, things that are dyed by this process become fast colored, and washing either with or without lyes cannot take away the sheen of their hues. But otherwise, you know what happens? They fade. So in this case, what is the preparation? It is the training that's going on. All this stuff about gymnastics and music, all of that wasn't done for its own sake. All of that was to make it possible for the soul to be dyed, that is habituated to this conviction of courage that would allow it to act reliably in fearful circumstances, and not to think that things that aren't fearful are fearful, and not to act rashly in the face of things that actually do require us to be a little bit more cautious. The dyeing itself is the rightly fixing the belief in the mind, and then the dyed garment would be the courageous person, the person who can be relied upon to brave dangers, either for the sake of the city, or if we're talking about the individual person, for themselves or for those closely connected with them, in circumstances where they need to act against their own fears, their potential fears, and in the face of danger. So this is what courage consists in for Plato. Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.